Okay. All right. It gives me great pleasure to introduce Rick Wilson from Oxnard.
Hi, everybody. My name is Rick Wilson. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Rick.
And I'm from Oxnard. Ooh. You know where it is, anybody? It's more than just, you don't know where Oxnard is. Fox Avenue, just south, La Colonia. Absolutely. And it's more than just a pretty name, I wanted to say that. So what's up in Santa Maria tonight? Oh, you get to go to AA, whoopee, yay. You know, it might not seem like a big deal, but I think that it could be, especially for the new people, for your old folks that have been here. I don't know what that was, but there's a couple of phones up here. Is that the way it's supposed to be? No, there you go. This is being recorded, so we can get it transcribed afterwards. So the newcomers, huh? Newcomers, pretty. You go to some meetings and they'll tell you you're the most important people in the room, and that may be true unless I'm in the room, and then that changes a little bit because you know I'm not much, but I'm all that I think about. And the book says that you are the lifeblood of the program, which is pretty important. You know, like your heart beating and stuff like that. That's pretty important stuff, and so. I guess what my job tonight is to tell you in a general way what it used to be like, what happened, and what it's like now for me today. And I do it a little bit differently. I go through the steps. You know, there's 12 steps up there, and sometimes they can seem pretty daunting. Well, the fact that there's 12 of them, you know, is pretty intense. And you know, if your life was like anything like my life when I got here, my life was basically over with as far as I was concerned. You know. Life had just gotten to the point where it's just too tough. It wasn't worth living anymore. My life actually sucked really badly, and I just didn't want to do it. It wasn't worth it, you know. I don't know where I got this, but I thought that hell, I'm not going to live past 25, so I'm not going to worry about, you know, careers or schooling. You know, I did go to school. I did go to high school for 4 years, and I quit my sophomore year. Do the math there. I mean, there was just other things to do. My priorities were set in different places, and by the time I got here when I was 26. And I'd like to tell you it hasn't been necessary for me to drink since I was 26, but that would be a lie. You know, life goes on. You know, it's been necessary for me to drink at least 100 times. When my brother died as a result of the Vietnam War, it was necessary for me to drink. When my mom passed away, my mom was a little French-Canadian lady. She was like, she didn't make it to 5 foot tall. I don't think she weighed 100 pounds. She had 9 kids. Wow. Look at the size of my head. She had 9 kids, and she was married to my dad, and I got to tell you, my dad is the reason why, when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, I knew one thing for sure, that I was not an alcoholic. I knew that for sure, because I said at a very early age, I'm never going to be like him. I'm never going to beat my wife. I'm never going to abuse the kids. I'm never going to do whatever I'm going to provide. I'm just going to be a better person than my dad. And so when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, I said that I knew I wasn't an alcoholic. I could have been anything else, but not an alcoholic. And my mom was married to him. You know, we were brought up Catholic. She, as far as she was concerned, she didn't have any choice, and she didn't leave. She stayed with him forever. And I come from Boston. Forever. And when she passed away, it was necessary for me to drink. When my girlfriend left me, it was necessary for me to drink. When she came back, it was necessary for me to drink. What can I say? Yet the power of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous is so strong that even though probably medically necessary, that it was absolutely necessary for me to drink in 100 forms, 100 things that have happened. I stand here before you as a result of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I have not had a drink since sometime in July back in 1977. It's a long freaking time. I think that's over 10 years, isn't it? What is it? So what else? So I started drinking at a very early age. I drank as much as I could for as long as I could. I used to think that I didn't have any social drinking, but as I cleared up, I realized that I did. I had social drinking between the ages of 8 and 12. It was only on occasions, weekends and holidays and stuff. And then, but about 12, I remember standing in the ballpark. And I got to tell you that coming from an alcoholic family, how many people, you don't even need to raise your hand. But if you come from an alcoholic family, I don't have to explain this to you. And if you didn't come from an alcoholic family, I don't know if I can. But I got to tell you, there was not a lot of love and affection in my house, as a result of the stuff that was going on and my choices, I was a bedwetter and a thumb sucker. And so when I went to school, I was totally embarrassed about what had happened to my house the night before. So when I went to school, I couldn't look at anybody in the eye. I just had to keep my eyes down like this. And, I couldn't do it, I was ashamed of who I was. I was ashamed of the things that were going on in my house. I was ashamed of the things that I was doing. And I was also ashamed of the things that I couldn't do, like protect my mom from my dad. I was just filled with, whatever, and shame. It's a good word. It's a horrible word, but that describes what was going on with me. And when I was standing out in the ballpark, because when I thought, in school, that if we had just that much eye contact, that you could see into my soul, and I couldn't let anybody in there, I just couldn't let you in there, so I didn't look. And when I was standing in the ballpark that day, I got some whiskey down, and I don't know, I was 10, 11, or 12, or whatever, and I got enough whiskey down so that I could feel it, And whiskey's not good stuff, Whiskey make me throw up, But I'm willing to muscle it down because I know what was, didn't know then, but I was willing to through peer pressure or whatever. I just got some whiskey down. And I can remember my shoulders relaxing. Hell, I rocked back on my heels and I thought, God, I feel 5'7" tall. It's an amazing thing. My shoulders relaxed. I took a deep breath, and for the first time in my life, this was the remarkable thing for me, and nobody around me ever even noticed it, but my gaze went from here to here, and I was able to look at you in the eye for the first time in a long time. And I remember this. I felt okay. Now, that doesn't sound like much unless you don't feel okay. Breathing ain't no big deal until there's no oxygen, if you're underwater and you're trying to get to the surface, it's a big deal when you get on top. So feeling okay was a big deal for me because I didn't feel okay before that. And I was able to look at people in the eye and say, hey. And then I took another drink and I said, how you doing? And then I took another drink and I thought, what the hell are you looking at, pal? It just changed what I thought you were thinking about me. And I never gave it up. I've never, ever, not even to today, have I ever tried to quit drinking. Why would you give up something like that? Something that just made me feel whole. From that day to this, from that day to when I was 26, I drank as much as I could for as long as I could. And I got to tell you that at 26, I wasn't trying to quit drinking when I come to Alcoholics Anonymous. I was here for all the wrong reasons. So if you're here for any reason, especially if you got one of those court cards, you signing court cards up there? You know what I say to those people who come with court cards? Welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. Even more, welcome home. Because if you have this, affliction, whatever, if you've got this going on in your life, this is not a bad place to be. I drank as much as I could. I took as many drugs as I possibly could. I would take drugs and then ask you what they were. Didn't matter to me. Airplane glue, cough syrup. They took the stuff out of cough syrup. Now, hell, I think they put it in cages now, right? You can't. It's like spray paint. You can't even get to it anymore. But I could walk right up and get cough syrup, you know? Not so. Booze was a little hard to get. Drugs were a little bit easier because they were all on the black market anyways. But I drank as much as I could for as long as I could. Like I said, I went to high school for 4 years, quit in my sophomore year. Again, because it was just other things going on. I have a tendency. I'm to the age where I can sing. I can sing every song from the 50s and the 60s and the 70s, not miss a beat. But sometimes I forget why I'm in this room. So bear with me. I got to change that water mix. I don't have a drinking problem. And by the way, I never did have I don't have a problem with alcohol, never did. Alcohol was the solution to my problems. When I stood at the ballpark and I fell 5'7" tall, you know, that's quite an amazing thing for a guy 5'4", you know. And when I was able to look at you in the eye for the first time, when I was able to do that, alcohol became the solution to my problems. It wasn't a problem. Even at the end, I had 100 problems. Alcohol wasn't one of them. Alcohol was how I coped with stuff. Coping isn't a very good word. You know, coping is like what you do with a toothache. You know, today I don't cope with stuff. I live my life today, and it's just in a far better, spiritually different place than I've ever been in my life. Due to the steps of the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. So, I went to school or didn't go to school, as it were, and I worked and I did in earnest my job. Did anybody take the 20 questions? Do we have a 20 question tip? No. Did anybody take a 20 question? No. There you go. There's a few. Okay. And one of the questions in there says, did drinking ruin your reputation? And I thought, God, drinking is my reputation. You know what I mean? I mean, that's what I am. You know, if you lived in the town that I was born in, grew up in, you were instructed by your folks not to hang around with me. And they'd say, I told you not to hang around with those Wilson boys, you know? And sometimes I'd be standing right there, you know. And it was, but I didn't care, you know. And they didn't want me in the house because I would steal their stuff. Because I'm a liar, cheat, and thief. It's got nothing to do with me being an alcoholic. It helps, but it doesn't have anything to do, you know. I know people who are not liar, cheats, and thieves, and that doesn't mean that I know anybody who hasn't lied, cheated, or stolen. It's just that that's not my first inkling. You know, I look at purses and see if they're open. I don't know why. I just do, you know. I'm really the guy that your mother warned you about, you know. I'm the kind of guy who will steal your drugs and help you look for them, you know. And then I'd say, you know, it's probably Kristen. She probably took them, you know. And if not her, Vicky for sure, you know. So I started drinking and drank as much as I could for as long as I could, and then came driving. I like to drink and drive. Anybody here? My last drinking and driving was very expensive. It was, the judge said, $275 for 10 days in L.A. County Jail. And I went to jail. I went to L.A. County Jail for 10 days. For 207. Anybody been in LA County Jail? $275, you get out 10 days sooner, would you pay it? Yeah. Well, I didn't know at the time. I thought, hell, I'll collect unemployment before, you know, my unemployment. I'll get out so I could back. I'll tell you how long ago this was. I actually had to go to the unemployment office to get my check. How rude is that, right? But anyways, I did that and I went to, it's $275. Pretty expensive. now I know it's like a $10,000 deal, 10,000 bucks. I figured it out at a meeting one time. You could go to a meeting every day and put $2 in the basket for that $10,000, and you could go to meetings for 14 years and drive yourself there and back. But I'm not here to, by the way, I'm not here to scare anybody out of, because we can't scare you. When I was sitting in the front row new and they said, hey, you're going to die. If you don't stop drinking, you're going to die. And I went, duh, I'm going to die anyway, you know, what the? Thank you. You know, God, if I could die, I'd be over with this shit and I wouldn't have, you know what I mean? I could just get on with life, I guess. Okay. But you know what I mean? It was living. The reason why I drank, drinking wasn't the problem. It was sobriety that was a problem. The book says people drink essentially because they like the effects of alcohol. I say it in a different way. I drank because I didn't like the way that I was feeling when I was sober. Book says we're restless, irritable, and discontented. And I can understand that. Do we have a big book up here? Is that a big book? Give me a big book. Is there one here? Yeah, please. The big book says a lot, by the way. And, you know, I heard somebody say all of my problems can be solved in this book, you know? And I looked in here and I didn't see a chapter to the IRS. But I believe that all my problems, the solution to all my problems is in this book. Because really what it's saying is, I think that the 12 steps are designed to clear away the things that stand between me and God. And I think that my only real problem is the illusion that I'm separate from God, because I feel that we can't be separate from God. By the way, if me talking about God bums you out, it's okay, because this is what Alcoholics Anonymous is about. I believe that the steps are designed to clear away the stuff that stands between you and God, because we have one answer here. We have one answer to a myriad of problems, and they're all out of this book. So if you have problems with the IRS, this book will help out. If you have problems with your girlfriend, boyfriend, this book will help out. If you are having trouble with your boss, this book will help out. If you need a boss, you know, like if you don't have a job, just saying if anybody's awake, this book will help you out, you know? Guy says, so why did you give me this book, Kristen? What did you want me to read? I want to talk about drinking, because really drinking is, I'm not going to go page on this, page 89, no, that's not what I want. I want a vision for you, and I know everybody's going to say it's on page 164, but I want the beginning of the chapter. It's a big book. You got to read this whole damn thing. Is it worth it? Are you worth it? Are you worth it? Hey, I'm only hurting myself. Why don't you leave me alone? I'm only hurting myself. I was in a mental institution. That's going to come up. I was in a mental institution, and the therapist, we went to therapy, right? Because that's what they do. They therapize you. And there's nothing wrong with therapy. There's really nothing wrong with therapy. But anyways, the therapist said, now, I got to tell you, I went to high school for 4 years and I quit my sophomore year. It doesn't make me stupid. It makes me uneducated. Okay, this is different, right? So when this guy's talking, I don't have to listen to everything because I can get the gist of it and know what's going on. So he said that, and this is different than what AA says, but he said that what we need to do is write a letter to the people who are responsible for our alcoholism. And we all know that's our parents, right? So I want you to write a letter to your parents explaining what's going on and what you're doing, and that you're an alcoholic and that's their fault. And so I went back to my room I didn't have a private room, but I went back to the dorm and I wrote a letter to my mom. And I said, hi, Mom, it's me, Rick. I know I haven't talked to you for a couple of years. I'm in California now. And I'm in a mental institution. I'm an alcoholic, and it's your fault. Can you send me $50? So I put a stamp on it, and I mailed it. And then we went to therapy, so we went back to class on, or whatever, therapy on Monday, and the therapist says, okay, everybody take out the letter, and I said, I've already mailed mine. He said, you did what? I guess I didn't listen to everything. It was an exercise, right? That was quite a while ago, you know, so it had to go, you know, Pony Express across cross country and Pony Express back, you know. And I get this letter, and this goes to the point where I'm only hurting myself. Why don't you just leave me alone? And I got this letter, and I could see the tears. I could feel the pain that my mom was going through, because I hadn't seen her or talked to her for a couple of years, you know. And I was in California, and I was in a mental institution, and I am an alcoholic. And I told her it was her fault. And this is a little lady that's been getting the shit kicked out of her from my dad for her whole life, verbally and physically. And I have the balls to write a letter like that. And when I get this letter back, I can feel, I don't know, I'm sober and I'm not, you know, whatever, and I can just feel the pain that's going into this letter. And she said, oh my God, Rick, if there's anything that I did to cause you, you know what I mean, what your mom would say to you, you know, back then. And she said, if there's anything that I did, I'm so sorry. And again, I could see the tears, I could see her crying, and I could see I could just feel it in the letter. And there was a check for $50. And I'm the kind of guy who said, she could have sent 100. There's just really never enough. So I'm drinking as much as I can. I'm a teenager. I'm drinking as much as I can. And we were just talking about music. Music is a big part of my life, and it was back then. It still is today. Jimi Hendrix was one of my guys, and he said in a song, I know I'm going to die. Because this is people, you know, say, what are you doing? You're killing yourself. Hey, I know I'm going to die when it's my turn to die. So why don't you let me live my life the way I want to? And that was kind of my anthem. And then one night, I was really loaded, and I thought, he's dead. He's already dead. And that's the way I'm going to live my life. And I thought, oh, and maybe that's where I came up. Well, I'm not going to live past 25. So I used to drive a lot. And I still drive a lot. But I used to drive a lot drinking, because I could do it better, you know? When I was drinking, I was a little bit more relaxed, you know what I mean? Could take it easy, and back then it would snow and stuff. But anyways, I'm going to tell you two stories, and then I want to take the next 3.5 hours to go through the steps. You said, speaker's choice. Because I am a nice guy, and I've got a lot of wonderful things, and I got a tattoo I can show, you know what I mean? I just got... But the reason why you came here tonight was not to see me. I think the reason, hopefully, other than they freaking made you come, was that you came here to get the message of Alcoholics Anonymous. And the message isn't me. The message isn't you. The message is the 12 steps. And really, I just want to spend some time there with the 12 steps. But I used to drive a lot, and so I'm going to tell you two stories. One, I was asleep one night, and I woke up, and I was driving down the street, which is pretty exciting. Whoa! And this goes to going to high school for 4 years, not making me stupid, it makes me uneducated, because I had this thought come to my mind, oh, you could be in an accident, and in an instant I was. I hit a parked car, and all of a sudden I'm driving a getaway car. And, right? The reason is that I got to get out of there because I don't have a license. And why don't I have a license? Because I lost it for drunk driving. Right? This was back before they had computers and stuff. And so you really had to. But anyways, I had smashed up a car. And within a few second, I realized that that I was in pretty tough shape, that I had hurt my chest from breaking the steering wheel, that I had knocked out my front teeth, that I lost some of my hair in the windshield. And, and the car was in worse shape than I was. You know, the fan was through the radiator, and it made it about a half a block. You know, the hood was up and everything. And I told you, I don't know if I told you this, but I come from New England, from Massachusetts, and I come from a small town in New England. And so I get out of the car, made it for about a half a block, maybe a block. I got out of the car, threw the keys down, and started to run. What I didn't know was that there was a cop behind me, and he witnessed the whole thing. And he said, you know, on those little microphone things, he said the words that I've always hated to hear from cops. He said, "Hey, Rick." So I realized, you know, that even if I did get away, it wasn't for... So I threw my hands up and I thought, what could I have done differently? While I was waiting for him to come over, right? Because I'm not one of those guys who runs from the cop, unless I think I can get away. But I'm not one of those guys who talk back to cops. Anyways, I thought, what could I have done differently? And the first thing that came to my mind was, Rick, if you weren't drinking, this wouldn't have happened. And then the second thought that came to my mind was that if this is the price that I've got to pay, I'm standing there with no front teeth, a little bit of hair gone, being arrested again for drunk driving, I don't have a driver's license. The only good thing about this was it wasn't my car. What could I have done differently? The first thought came to my mind, Rick, if you weren't drinking, this wouldn't have happened. The second thought that came to my mind was, if this is the price that I've got to pay to get what alcohol gives me, this is why I never quit drinking. I never tried to quit drinking. If this is the price that I got to pay to get what alcohol gives me, because you know what alcohol gives me, I'll tell you what it gave me. It gave me that feeling of being okay. And I didn't know, you know, Kevin and Mike and Joey, and when they went to high school, they grew up, you know. They had their struggles and stuff, but, you know, not so much with me. Not that I didn't have friends that were alcoholics, but if this is the price that I got to pay to get what alcohol gives me, I'm in, you know. And it didn't happen. I mean, come on, it didn't happen every time I drank. It only happened 2, 3, maybe 4 times a year. But if that's the price... I mean, and that's the insanity that the book talks about, you know? After we do this over and over, here I am, no driver's license, no front teeth, getting arrested again for drunk driving, and I'm thinking, well, that's okay. I can do this. I can do this. As a matter of fact, I said, okay, I can do this. Another time I was driving down the street and whiskey, I don't know, it's an acquired taste, right? I mean, when I first drank whiskey, it wasn't like, hey, that's good stuff, you know? Like lemonade or something. Ooh, it's like, Jesus. But let's muscle it down there. This thing came on or something. Let's muscle it down and get, because it's going to do something. It's going to make you somebody that you're not. It's going to give you the courage to do things that you can't do without it. It's going to quiet those voices in your head. It's going to change what I think that you're thinking about me. So I'm going to drink it, right? I would rather drink whiskey than anything else because the less that goes in, the less that comes out. Meaning I don't have to waste time in the bathroom. Because when I come out of the bathroom, how many times have you come out of the bathroom and said, oh, man, you should have been here. They were giving it away or whatever, you know. You missed it, right? That's why I'm always going someplace. Hey, it's not happening here, quarter, you know, I'm out of town. But whiskey's expensive. Even the cheap stuff's more expensive than wine. I mean, you know, the wine that I drank. Anybody, Boone's Farm Apple One? Not a Strawberry Hill guy. But Boone's Farm apple wine. It's really not even apple wine. It's just made near an apple orchard, so they call it apple wine. But anyways, I drink this when the, you know, in between paychecks, and I don't know about you, but that cheap wine has a loosening effect on my bowels, so there's always rumbling going on. And I know that I just got paid because I've got a glass of whiskey between my legs. I got a glass of whiskey between, and the bottle's underneath the seat. And I don't even have, I'm not even taking the time to drink it at home before I go to the club, because I'm going to the club, right? I know which club that I'm going to. Salisbury Beach, anybody? Anyways, I'm going to that club on Salisbury Beach. It's not there anymore. I think it was called the, I really think it was called the Playboy Club or something like that. But, yeah, hey, I'm a Playboy. No, that didn't happen. I can't even drink it over the kitchen sink. I got to get in the car and get over there because I got to go. I got to go. I've got this plan, right? Because I don't want to get there late. Oh, man, you missed it. They were just giving it away, you know, or whatever. So I'm driving down the street, and I'm muffling down this whiskey, and I realize, you know, it's, I'm going to have to throw up, and I'm driving, which is really inconvenient, and I did get pulled off the side of the road, but I didn't get the door or the window open. Did you ever go, I don't know, I went over the handlebars of my bicycle one time, and it went kind of like this. I'm driving around, and then I go over the handlebars, and then all of a sudden it goes like this. Very slow. And that's what's happening. I'm sitting in the front seat and everything slows down. And I realize that I'm not going to get the window open in time. And so I said, hey, you know what you can do? You can put your hand over your mouth. And I did. And it doesn't work. It came out of every hole in my head, in between my fingers, all over the front of me, all over the inside of the car. And at the same time, simultaneously, I filled my pants with Boone's Farm apple wine. And then it comes back to real time. It comes back to real time. There I am sitting in the car. Now what do? So I didn't know what to do. I've never been in this situation before. So I turned on the windshield wipers, which has no effect at all because it's all on the inside. So I actually have to scrape it off, you know. Just want to tell you some of the stuff that I gave up for drinking, you know, some of the fun that I had. And so I scraped it off and I drove home. And I'd like to be able to tell you that from that day to this that I've not had a drink because I was mortified. But that was a, you know, that that was a horrible situation. And it just came to me, oh, my God, what are you thinking, Rick? You can't do that anymore. And what happened was I drove home, hosed out the car, changed my clothes. Hopefully I took a shower and got back on the road cursing, now I'm going to be late. Right? Probably going to miss it, and I don't want to miss anything, right? One day I woke up and I was 26, a year past 25. I went, whoa, I'm a year past my expiration date. Life isn't worth living. I think I'll kill myself. Somebody said, hey, if you get certified crazy, they'll pay you SSI. I said, how do you do that? They said, go to Camarillo State Hospital. Remember when Camarillo, everybody knows Camarillo, right? I don't even have to say State Hospital, I just say Camarillo. Even the guy who doesn't know where Oxnard is knows Camarillo, right? It's a university now. It has a whole different ring on my resume. It's just totally different. But anyways, back then, I realized, it was, somebody told me that if you could certify crazy, that, and one of the ways that you could do that, so I went to Camarillo State Hospital, and I checked in, and I walked in, there was a pretty gal there, I said, hi, my name's Rick, I'm not an alcoholic. And they said, she said, well, what are you doing here then? And I thought, God, I'm being rejected in a mental institution. They don't have your checks waiting for you, by the way, if you're trying to figure this out. You have to actually apply for it. And so I went to apply for it. And in the meantime, back then you could smoke in the meetings, right? I think it was mandatory, actually. And but they gave me Bugler, and they don't give crazy people caffeinated coffee, but so they gave me decaf coffee. And but Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, they had AA meetings down the hall. They had caffeinated coffee. And the guys and the gals from H&I used to come in, they'd bring in filter tip cigarettes. They brought cookies, and what I thought was the smell of non-crazy perfume. And to be determined. And so that's why I came to AA. I didn't have anything to do. I knew I was an alcoholic. I wanted to be paranoid schizophrenic with suicidal tendencies. To me, that sounded more romantic than alcoholic, you know what I mean? I couldn't imagine trying to pick up a girl and say, hey, I'm an alcoholic. But hey, I'm paranoid schizophrenic with suicidal tendencies. You know, I could tell. I could see him say, hey, come on over here, boy. Come over here, little boy. I'll change you. That's how I got to Alcoholics Anonymous. And what happened was I came in here and I listened and I saw folks like you come up here and here and tell stories on your stuff. You saying stuff up here that you could have got away with if you just shut up, you know? But no, people were telling stories on themselves. They were saying the things that I was trying to forget. And so that's how I realized that, hey, too bad I'm not an alcoholic, you know? And then we would read every, you know, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, if you did that, you could get to go out on Sunday. And so I went to 4 meetings a week, and then I learned, you know, I'd read this stuff, and they read it over and over and over again. And, you know, in there, there's just all kinds of good stuff. But one of the things in Chapter 3, it says an alcoholic, I thought, Jesus, too bad, I'm not, you know, because I'm not like my dad, I ain't never going to be. But it said an alcoholic is somebody who has the inability to control and enjoy his drinking. I thought, you know, that's me, because I can't control my drinking if I'm enjoying it. And if I'm enjoying it, there's absolutely no control. Did I say that right or backwards? It didn't sound right, but you know what I mean? I can't do both of them together. I can do one or the other. So I could get into this leper colony. I can get into this club. I earned my seat here. And as a result of that, I used to, I'm from Oxnard, and you probably have heard my name. Rick Wilson is my last name. I was the best chair putter away that Oxnard ever had on Saturday night meeting. I'm sure they put it in the grapevine and all that. At first, it wasn't very nice. They said, hey, will you put the chairs away? And I thought, well, shit, I'll put your damn chairs away, you know? That way I didn't have to talk to anybody, any of you, you know? So I just put the chairs away. And then within about 30 days, some other newcomer came in, and apparently somebody asked him to put the chairs away. And I looked over, and I saw him putting my chairs away, and I thought, hey, what the hell's going on here? And so I watched him, and it was good news. He wasn't very good at it, so I put my chairs away and then fixed his, you know, and I felt okay. But something happened in that time. I started putting away your chairs. Now I'm putting away my chairs. Something, there was and I don't remember doing it. That's why when we do this seemingly unrelated stuff will happen to you. And then one day I started putting away our chairs, and I've been a member of Alcoholics Anonymous ever since. I can't tell you that I've never wanted to drink. But it's been a long, long time. I no longer suffer from alcoholism anymore. Haven't for a long time. I don't have a problem with alcoholism. I go to a meeting and they'll say, hey, the only people who can share are people who have a problem with alcohol. I say, well, I can't share because I ain't got a problem with it. I've recovered from alcoholism as a result of working those steps. So let's work those steps, okay? We got 10 minutes to go through those steps. Now, I could do them in 10 minutes, right? I'll do them if it takes 10 minutes. But I don't want to do them a lifetime. Christ, do you know how long a lifetime is? Not very long if you don't do those steps. Or the other thing, they could be forever. Life could be forever and ever and ever. It's like longer than a Sunday afternoon, you know what I mean? You know how long Sunday afternoons are? Knowing that everybody else is having a wonderful time with a turkey or a ham on their table, and you're out getting liquor one more time. Loser. That's a long time on a Sunday afternoon, especially if you live in Massachusetts and you can't buy booze. You have to go to New Hampshire on Sunday to get it. And I drive by everybody's house, and all the kids are playing with their poofy little dresses and knickers and shit. So let's do step one, okay? We admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. I like that bit right there. Okay, I say this. It's Sunday night, right? It's Sunday night, and you're in Santa Maria, California, arguably one of the nicest places on the face of the earth. I mean, really, you could be in Lompoc in just a few minutes, right? I saw a sign for Guadalupe, you know? 8 miles. 9 miles. Shut up. But you could be any place on a Sunday night. There's some good TV on, there's movies out, and there's a lot of things. You could be, hell, you could be in an L.A. in a couple, three, you could be in Oxnard in 2 hours. But you're in an AA meeting. Just admit it. People who don't have that problem are not here trying to check it out. Jeez, I wonder if I'm one of those alcoholic things. This is the most expensive club there is. Some people give their lives before getting here. Some people come and give their lives. Some people give their lives before they got here. The good news is all the dues have already been paid. This is the most expensive club, but the dues have already been paid. We got to pay rent here and buy coffee, so give us some bucks. But the dues for AA have already been paid. Admitted we are powerless over alcohol. How did you get here? Because you can't drink. Because as much as you want to, you can't drink successfully. Oh, you can drink. Of course you can drink. Hey, shit, the guy in AA said I can't drink. What's this, you know? You know, I think less people would drink after they come here if your head exploded when you drank. Because you'd be sitting next to somebody and they just took a drink and your head exploded and everybody goes, wow, man, his freaking head exploded. Now, if you really want to die, you might take a drink. There he goes, drinking again. But you know what happens when you drink after you've been here for a while? Especially if you've been here for a while, for a long time, like 30 or 45 days. You know what happens? You take a drink. The hell was I thinking about that? I got this. You know what I'll do? I'm just going to finish this and then go home. And you may. And then the next day, you may have two. What the hell was I thinking about? This is way... This ain't no big deal. I can handle this. You know what a non-drinker does? A non-alcoholic, if you hand them a drink and they drink it, so you want another one? They say, I don't know, I'm feeling this one. I think, of course, that's a normal drinker, but not so with us. I mean, I'm sitting there in a car full of... I don't know how to say that politely, so you remember what I just said. And I'm thinking, I just got to get this stuff out of here so I can get going so I can drink some more. I've never once ever tried to quit drinking. And then, and I'm getting off on stuff, and I don't have a lot of time left, but the second part of step one is that our lives have become unmanageable. I just go back to the first thing. Hell, you're in an AA meeting on Sunday night? Okay. He said I can go to 9:30. And some of you who know me know that I can. So anyways, I mean, it's just, you know, I admitted that I'm powerless over alcohol. Hey, I'm screwed, you know, and that my life is unmanageable. I was in a mental institution going to AA meetings looking like that's a step up, you know what I mean? You're at an AA meeting in Santa Maria, California. What's the byline of the city? You know, like Malibu is the way of life. Santa Maria is... The all-American city. The all-American city, yeah. Oxnard, I don't know if anybody knows Oxnard. It's Bakersfield by the sea. The city that I grew up in was Lynn, or I was born in Lynn, Massachusetts, and their tagline was Lynn, the city of sin. You never come out the way you went in. And it's fun when I'm at a meeting and somebody from that area will finish that up with me. But anyways, let's get through the steps. I really think that step one, now if you're in a recovery home or some kind of therapy or something, they might ask you to write things down. And there's nothing in the book about writing things down, and there's nothing wrong with writing things down. if this just nothing there. You just got to come to a place where you can admit it. Hey, you know what? That I am powerless. I can't drink and stop. And that's my problem. I'm going there and I'm just going to have one, right? Or just two. Or okay, let's be reasonable. I'm going to have three beers and then I'm going to go home. And then the next thing you know, it's the next morning, right? That's an alcoholic, right? Admitted that we're powerless over alcohol, that I don't have the ability to stop when I want to, right? And that my life is unmanageable. My life is unmanageable because of the I can't stop drinking when I want to. Step two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. The sanity or the insanity that they're talking about is the fact that you think about drinking after what I experienced in that car. After I smashed up my car one more time and thought, I'm going to just do it this time. I don't know what I'm going to do, but I'm going to do it and we'll figure it out. You know what I mean? That's the insanity that they're talking about there. I think that there's not much to do there. You could write about it and it would be wonderful. You could get a relationship with the insanity that you have, but I think the only thing that you have to do with step two is go to another meeting. And if you go to enough meetings, you will wake up in the meeting one time and say, hey, you know what? I have come to believe that a power greater than myself, and it may not even be God, and it doesn't have to be. And it doesn't have to be my God, your God, or his God. It has to be a power greater than yourself. And what I used for a long time was the group of Alcoholics Anonymous, because there's 30 or 40 people in here. We certainly have more power than I do. And as a result of that, I came to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity, because I was coming every day. I was going to 2 to 3, 4 meetings a day. Made a decision to turn your will and your life over to the care of God. Made a decision. How long does that take? Instantaneous. To turn your will and your life, your thoughts and your actions over to the care of God. Not that he's going to do stuff for you, although he will, but to his care. You've got to do the things. The results are up to him, her, it, the group, whatever. Doesn't matter. And by the way, if this God stuff is, I heard a guy one time say, if this God stuff, you know, chases you out of Alcoholics Anonymous, alcohol will chase your rusty ass back in here. Because alcohol, you think God's tough, alcohol will fuck you up, you know what I mean? It'll mess you up. You're in here, because you're not going to give up your Sunday night to miss whoever's on Sunday night to come in here and listen to me. Made a decision to turn your will and your life. I realized the first three steps that I'd already done them before I even knew what they were. That's how fast it can happen. It was like 90 days or whatever, but I realized I didn't work on them. I just came to meetings, and if you do that, you'll come to a point where you made a decision to turn your will and your life, your thoughts and your actions, over to the care of God. But in the book says when you make that decision, when you consciously make that decision to turn your will and your life over to the care of God, the book says that a great effect will happen. It'll just happen. But it won't last long unless you put forth some effort. And that's the fourth step. And how many of you heard, hey, watch out for the fourth step? I would tell you to watch out for the people that tell you to watch out for the fourth step. Because the fourth step is the medicine that we have here. This is the medication that we have. The medicine is probably a better word. The medicine that we have here. If you do this stuff, this is the stuff that will stand, that will clear away the stuff that stands between you and God. And by the way, the fourth step's not that difficult. You know, I find that you don't even need internet connection to be able to do the fourth step, right? All you got to do is write down who you're mad at. The first thing you do is write down who you're mad at. Is anybody here doesn't know who they're mad at? And some guys don't. Some people don't. And we can help you with that. We can give you some hints. We can piss you off enough so we'll be the first one on there. And if you know who you're mad at, do you know what they did? Those are the first two things that they ask you to do. I'm mad at him because of this. I'm mad at my dad because what he did to my mom and what he did to me. I know those stuff. By the way, you don't have to write a story about it. All you have to do is write that down. My dad, my mom. That's enough. Because when you sit down with the fifth step, because how many people have good handwriting here? How many people know how to spell? I went to high school for 4 years, quit my sophomore year. I don't know how to pronounce, let alone spell. And my handwriting is for crap. I'm not going to do some right. Did you ever go to a meeting and the guy says, I've been working my four-step for 9 months now. I get 75 pages and I think I'm about halfway done. What the hell is that? In the book, I do know enough about English to know that in the book it says that we do an outline. My dad did this, and what does it affect? Now, it gets into a point where it does affect some, it has a little bit more work than you, that may seem a little bit more difficult. So this is why you need a sponsor. The sponsor will walk you through this. Hopefully the sponsor has been through the fourth step and the fifth step to get you there. But that's really what you want to write down. And then the third part, it asks for us to write who we're mad at, what did they do, and what it affects. The next thing that we're going to do, it says we look at this list from an entirely different angle because it held the key to the future. So it tells us what to do, and then it tells us what's going to happen. It holds the key to the future. I have a car out there. Most of us do, right? We're going to get in the car tonight. It's easier, although some of us could get it without the key. It's easier to have the key to get the hell out of here, right? So this is the key to the future. This list that you're making is going to show you, it's going to shine a light on the road ahead of you, right? And if you don't want that, that's okay, but I'm telling you it's easier if you can see what's going on. Sometimes we're blinded by the light, and so just do it. There's three things in there, and then there's the fourth column, and then it tells us what to do about resentment. And then there's a fear inventory. A few years back, I've been sober for a while, and a few years back, I did a fear inventory, really a thorough fear inventory out of the book, and it really changed my life, and I would ask you to really look at that fear inventory. If you've had a problem and you're coming back, look at that fear inventory. It'll change your life. In there it says something along the lines of fear is an evil and corroding thread, and the fabric of our existence is woven through. You can't see fear when you look at me, right? You can't see the fear that is, but people, we are driven by 100 forms of fear, 100 forms of fear, which may be thousands of fears, you know? And as a result of that, we make decisions based on self that put us in a position to be hurt, you know? I don't like the way he's looking at me. What's up with that? Why are you sitting there like that? You know, it just goes all into my head. So you know what? He looks like he wants to punch the shit out of me, so I'm going to go punch the shit out of him first, you know? So what if he's 5'8" and I'm only 5'? You know what I mean? It doesn't matter. It just, when I'm driven by fear, but when I'm driven by love, it changes everything because that's the opposite of fear. The opposite of fear is love. And I know that doesn't sound like, hey, you know, shit, I wasn't in a mental institution talking about, oh, hey, I love you, you know, or anything like that. But then it talks about sex. So the three things that it talks about in the inventory is resentment, fear, and sex, okay? And the reason why it does is because those are the three things, those are the three not the most important things, but the things that are, that I don't think anybody is a, you know, gets a free ride on any of them. So you just write, you know, one of the things that happens is people, when they're doing their fourth step, they say, what about the stuff I don't remember? Because they want to do it right. I tell them, don't write that stuff down. You know, just skip over that stuff, and then, because in the back of the book it says more will be revealed. So we take this stuff and we take it and we do admit it to God, to ourselves, and to another human being, the exact nature of our wrongs. And that's what we do with the fourth step, with this outline. My dad, my mom, this had affected everything in my life. And then I bring it to my sponsor and I say, hey, you know what? This happened on that. And I'm going to remember from what's this in this outline here. And that's what the thing that's going to take time. You can do your fourth step tonight. The last four step I did it in my head, and the longest it took for me to do was to write it down. It took probably 15 seconds. But we're not used to, I'm not used to doing that kind of stuff, you know? So anyways, admit it to God, to ourselves, and to another human being, the exact nature of our wrong. And then people start thinking about, you know, what is God's will? Well, let's get into a little bit more. The good news is step six, there's nothing to do. Oh, by the way, you know why I'm going through this so quickly? Because in the beginning, there was six steps, only six steps. And in the book, the guy says, I took 3 to 4 hours to go through the then six-step program thoroughly with Dr. Bob. okay? 3 to 4 hours to do thoroughly the six-step program. And Bill went home that night and he wanted to write the book, you know, for a variety of reasons. So he's, and I know this because I heard it from a guy who's heard it from a guy who went to the meeting one time. And and it's a true story. So when Bill went home to write the book, he stopped at Starbucks and got an extra ad shot in his coffee, went home and wrote the book. And the very next day, there were 12 steps. If you did them the day before, you only had to do 6. Now you've got to do 12. You know there's a group out there someplace, probably Santa Ynez, you know what I'm saying, trying to make this a 24-step program. So if you do them this weekend, you only got to do 12. And in step 6, it says, if you conjugate the verbs, if there's any conjugators here, raise your hands, and then people can ask you at the end of the meeting. Basically, what this says, if you put it in present tense singular, it says, I am ready to have God remove all these defects of character. That's what it says. There's no action words in there. I am ready. But what if you're not? And a lot of people aren't. What if you're not? Then you have to go back. How far? I don't know. How far do you have to go back? Once you get there, then you can say, I'm ready. Then you can take step 7, and that's just humbly asking to remove your shortcomings. Then step 8 says, made a list of all persons we had harmed. It says, we already got this list because we did it when we did our 4-step. I say, well, what if it's not complete? And it never is, you know, usually never. Then you complete it. And it's not people that you don't like. It's people that you've done harm. If you broke something, if you owe money, the guy said, I don't want to pay him back my money. I said, good, because he doesn't want yours. He wants his back. But if I don't like you, you know, I've never liked you, and I always thought you were a pompous ass. But now I'm getting closer to God, and I'm sorry that you're a pompous ass. I mean, that's not what the fourth and, you know, I love you. You know that. Okay, so let's get out of here, right? That's 8, and then 9. You just make direct amends to such people whenever possible, except when to do so when injured them. By the way, you're not one of the others, because if you were one of the others, it would say them or you, right? So you're not on there. You get off of that one. Step 10, continue to take personal inventory. So basically, and then when we're wrong, promptly admit it. Basically, the stuff that we've done that's taken us all this time to do it up to here, we just continue to do that on a daily basis. We spot check stuff. What's going on? You know, how am I doing? And step 12, having had a spiritual awakening, there's a bunch of things that will happen. Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message. And what is the message? The message is that Alcoholics Anonymous works. It really does. Actually, that's a paragraph in the book. It works. It really does. So at the end of the meeting, when we shake hands and do this, say, it works. It really does. That's all you got to say. So I'm going to be listening, too. And to carry this message having had a spiritual awakening, we try to carry this message and practice these principles, and that's the tough part. And some of you noticed I skipped over step 11. It's probably the most important one in the group. Sought through prayer and meditation, prayer talking to God, meditation listening to God, to improve our conscious contact with God, thinking about God, to improve my conscious contact with God, whatever it is that you think that God is, as you understand him, praying only for the knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. Prayer and meditation, prayer talking to God, meditation listening to God. I don't think God's up there. I think prayer is just for me to remind me that I am not God. I don't think God's up there saying, geez, I hope Rick checks in today. He didn't check in yesterday. I'm a little nervous up here. I don't think that's going to happen, you know. But I also know that I have requests that I put to God, and my part is to listen to his answer, and that's the meditation. The other thing that I know is that he sends angels to us, right? And angels are messengers. When God has something to say to me, he sends you to me and puts you in my life. And
you did a good job.
Good job. Thank you very much. We're going to pass the basket one more time for me. No? Just do the steps. Get it over with. Save your life. Save your life. Because life is going to be miserable, man, if you don't. And I'm not going to scare you with that. So thanks for having me up.
All right, thank you, Rick. Let's give Rick another hand. And Rick will be available for